You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. It's Football Friday. We've got you covered. We've got a triple header of college football on tap tonight. Steve Merrill and Joseph Lisi are going to join us. We're going for the two with Joe Lisi. GoForTheTwo.com. Steve Merrill joins us every Monday and Friday. We'll talk college football, NFL football, and NASCAR with Steve Merrill. Pat Mayo joins me in studio. We get Pat Mayo. Super lock of the week. Mayo now sitting with a 1-1 record after 2 weeks. His super lock fell flat last week with the Cincinnati Bengals. So we've got you covered. All things football all the time. We've got a millionaire maker lineup for you. And I've said it before, but I really like this one. This one's rock solid, man. This one, everything just fell into place. Everything fell into place extremely easily. And I'm thinking outside the box here. We got some players that aren't going to be highly owned by others, or at least I don't think they will be. So we got a ton of stuff to get to. We got about 1,000,001 games to break down on the program tonight. So let's keep the monologue relatively short. Week 3 of the National Football League regular season kickstarted last night as the New England Patriots not only beat up the Houston Texans, but they shut them out. You know, who was the team playing with a rookie quarterback? As Brock Osweiler was completely exposed. Bill O'Brien playing against a third-string quarterback, play right into Belichick's hands, playing it safe to the vest, playing it cautious. You got Jacoby Brissett. You know, Rob Gronkowski's in uniform, but he's banged up. You know, you guys paid Brock Osweiler money for a reason. Lamar Miller sucks, all right? You know, it used to be, oh, Lamar Miller, oh, it's Miami. They don't give him the ball enough. No. It's not Miami. It's him, all right? He's one of these dudes. You give him the ball a million times, and he gets you 3 yards. So, yeah, maybe he gets you fantasy volume, but Lamar Miller is Lamar Miller. Sort of like C.J. Spiller. You know, I used to wonder, how come the Bills don't give C.J. Spiller the ball more? He's so fast. He's so explosive. Doug Marrone got the job. He said, I don't think Spiller gets the ball enough. I'm going to give this guy the ball until he pukes. Well, he gave him the ball about 7 times, and then he puked on the sidelines, and then we realized, you know what, C.J. Spiller's not an every down back. Lamar Miller's average, but I pinned this game on Bill O'Brien. Played right into the hands of the master, Bill Belichick. And I can't believe the betting markets. I wish I could go back in time like Quantum Leap and re-bet the New England Patriots on the money line, plus 9.5 points against Arizona in week one. And here we were. Here we were once again. Ooh, the Houston Texans. Ooh, the Texans this. What, you mean the same Texan team lost 30-0 in the playoffs last year? The Texans are quitters, all right? Unlike Bill Belichick and the Patriots. They roll out Jimmy Garoppolo, it doesn't matter. They roll out Jacoby Brissett, it doesn't matter. And it's not by accident. But truth be told, it really is an amazing trend that's going on right now in the National Football League this year. As quarterbacks that have never played in the league before, are 8-1. They played 9 games. They're 8-1. They're actually 9-0 against the spread, depending on what number you got with the Cowboy game against the Giants in week one. Trevor Siemian's winning. Carson Wentz is winning. Jimmy Garoppolo was winning. Jacoby Brissett is winning. We go down the list, and any quarterback that hasn't played before steps up onto the field and gets it done. Dak Prescott getting it done. As these rookie virgin quarterbacks, no problem. And they don't even have Rob Gronkowski, but it's not by accident. I've been one of the big Patriot accusers over the years. You know, the Deflategate. Deflategate wasn't much, but Brady turned it into something. You know, the video film sessions and all that type of stuff. Now, listen, have they been a little bit unethical over the years? But that's what winners do. It's as simple as that. You know, Nortel was a big corporate conglomerate. They went down with the financial collapse. Right now, it's being turned into the Canadian military spy building. So it has to be completely secure. When they went into this building, they found over 500 wiretaps and bugs. 500! There were hundreds of them. The entire building was one big wiretap. Who was doing it? Competitors. Corporate espionage. So really, I think we're kind of naive to believe that, you know, teams aren't looking for an edge. The fact of the matter is the Patriots just do it better than everybody else. The fact of the matter is Bill Belichick is basically Mr. Burns and Darth Vader rolled into one. Like, and, you know, Mr. Burns will do whatever it takes to win, and Darth Vader, God damn it, will do whatever it takes to win. I wanted to say gosh darn it, but hey, what can you do? We're live. You can do whatever it takes to win. You know, you can accuse the ethics of the Patriots over the years. There's nothing unethical about drafting well and exploiting your opponent's weaknesses. There's nothing unethical about that. Look at a loser, sad sack, pathetic Buffalo Bills. Look at the Buffalo Bills. They got a million and one needs, so what do? They go out and draft Cardale Jones in the fourth round. A quarterback that right now, if he was on Ohio State, would be the backup. All right? He couldn't even beat JT Barrett out for the starting gig. But the Buffalo Bills decide to take Cardale Jones. Why? Because they're losers. The Buffalo Bills are losers. Losing is contagious as much as winning is. The New England Patriots already have Tom Brady. They already have Jimmy Garoppolo. But they're thinking, you know what? If something happens to Garoppolo these 4 weeks, we better do something. You know, the New England Patriots, they draft Jacoby Brissett, who's ready and able to run a system in the National Football League, just like the Dallas Cowboys took Dak Prescott, who's ready and able to run a system in the National Football League. Cardale Jones not ready to run a system in the Big Ten right now, but the Bills used the fourth round pick on him. So say what you will about the Patriots and their ethics, there's nothing unethical about being as good as they are. They have no excuses. Look at Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. Oh, Jordy Nelson's out. How come Aaron Rodgers? Well, Jordy Nelson's out. So what? So what? Jacoby Brissett does it without Rob Gronkowski. Chris Hogan. No one wants Danny Amendola. The Patriots aren't loaded with talent. They just expect to win, unlike all these other losers in the National Football League. So say what you will about Belichick. Love him, hate him, you gotta respect him. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Let's get right to Steve Merrill so we can get to as many games, races, and everything else in between as possible. We got Joe Lisi coming up. We're talking college football with Joe. Pat Mayo is joining me in studio. We're talking NFL football with Pat. I've got an NFL DraftKings Millionaire Maker lineup for you that I like. I'm a fan of this lineup. I think it's actually rock solid. I'm thinking a little bit outside of the box as far as the mainstream is concerned, but that's nothing new. Let's bring in Steve Merrill right now. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, Gabe, doing well.
So, Steve, it's rare. We're going to call a triple header tonight. We got a big weekend of sporting action. I know you're really excited for the World Cup of Hockey as well. Russia and Canada, Steve, on Saturday night. It's a good thing that you're not a U.S. hockey fan. Like, you gave up on the Capitals. The Americans got swept, Steve, 3 games. They couldn't win 1 game.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I haven't followed it at all, but from some of my hockey friends, I was told that they did not support a very good lineup.
No, it's amazing. 1980, the Miracle on Ice, the greatest overachievers ever in American hockey now, just huge underachievers consistently. All right, Steve. So, and oh, yeah, on Monday, we got the debate, Steve. We haven't talked politics much recently. We'll jump in on Monday.
Bad news for the Falcons-Saints game, that's for sure.
Yeah, I tell you what, I actually had a guy here at the network, he'll remain nameless, Drew, who actually, he actually said, he told me, I felt bad because I was going to take the kids' money. But like, he's like, oh, no, the football game will have higher ratings than the debate. And I'm like, no, it won't. I'm like,
all the football games combined might not have higher ratings than the debate.
I just saw today, you know what the projected viewership is? 80 million.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be what would that be, like a 20 or 30 share probably?
I mean, the Super Bowl
gets like 100 million is like a 40 share, I think,
so
right?
So basically, yeah, if you took every NFL game on Sunday, it would sort of be the same as what the debate
maybe. It might still be less. I was kind of kidding when I said that, but I mean, that's second only to the Super Bowl all year probably.
Yeah, we're talking MASH type numbers.
Yeah, that's right. There are three networks.
Donald Trump's coming in here cold too. I look forward to talking about this on Monday. No prep, Steve. He's like the gambler. He doesn't believe in capping. He's a gut gambler.
That's interesting because I didn't know that for sure, but I'd heard some people last week say they thought he might go on there pretty much unprepared. And I think if I was Hillary, what I would do is I'd name all the coaches. I'd start naming all the prime ministers and all the presidents for every country, and then go like, India, Donald, you know who the India prime minister is, and of course he won't, but none of us would, and it really doesn't matter. My rebuttal would be, Hillary, you know all of them, and you still did a terrible job, so that's it'd be true. Interesting to see how that plays out.
You're right. It shows how bad she is that, like, he knows nothing and actually might not be overwhelmed.
One of the reasons I like Trump, though, is he does know nothing. That's actually the one strength he has, I think, when it comes to politics.
I think that's a problem right now, Steve, with the world. That's the problem with the American vote, you just said. That's the one thing I like about him. He doesn't know anything.
but in all honesty, we won't get too deep into tonight, but one thing I do like about Trump is he actually, I think, will surround himself with guys, you know, that are somewhat experts in the field. He does that in business. We'll see. 35% chance we find out, right?
Yeah. My last thing about this, I got a real kick out of it. They're really trying to lower expectations, the Trump camp right now. You know, he's not an expert debater. She's been doing this for 24 years. And, they're lowering down. They're like, he's not a career politician. He might not be very good at this. And I'm thinking, wow, you're running for me. If you're not going to be very good at the debate, how are you going to be good at the presidency, right? Like, it's kind of a catch-22 argument they're using.
Do you think they're going to be odds out Monday on over-under number of times he says crooked Hillary? It'd be good stuff.
You know what? My books don't have any debate odds, Steve, but I heard there are a few. I'm interested to see.
Well, it wouldn't be out till Monday, I bet, Sunday.
Yeah, they claim they're going to have live in-game wagering during the debate.
I mean, how can you not? If you got 80 million people watching, why would you not? It's more than Monday Night Football for the next 5 weeks, probably.
I'm curious to see. What are they going to do? They're going to use, like, what polls? The book better say, yeah, we're using CNN polls as who won the debate.
Yeah, I think that gets a little tricky. I think the over-under props could be interesting, like how many times he says crooked Hillary, how many times email is said. I mean, you and I need to set some numbers, maybe.
No, you're right. Actually, you know what's funny? Trump actually sent out a questionnaire to his supporters saying, do you think I should call her crooked Hillary at the debate? Like, they're feeling that out, whether, like, they're going to come across.
The supporters will say yes, but that's not who he has to win over. And I think it'd actually be a big mistake because the independents are probably the ones that don't like that as much. So it'll be interesting. We'll see.
Yeah. Susie Housecoat's not going to like him, like, mocking her and going after. Yeah. Right. So anyway, Steve, we got to call a triple header tonight. Normally, we got a crappy game or two to talk about. I like this. It's sort of like the battle of the networks. ESPN used to just own Friday night, and they'd have their game or maybe two games. But now with Fox Sports 1 in the game and even CBS Sports Network in the college football business, we got a triple header tonight. And it's funny. CBS has Wyoming, Eastern Michigan, ESPN's got TCU, SMU, and Fox Sports 1 actually has the best game of the night. But I can't believe it, Steve. The Eastern Michigan Eagles are actually 2-1.
Yeah, and they might be 3-1 after tonight.
I think they will be.
Yeah. And you know, we talk about home dogs on these national TV games, and yes, this is like, you know, kind of a buried Friday night game. But for Eastern Michigan, as you know, Gabe, this is big. And this is probably the biggest game of the season they'll have, actually. So I think you can make a case for them here. They'll be pretty psyched.
You know what? Eastern Michigan racked up 61 or whatever it was on Mississippi Valley State in week one.
Without Jerry Rice playing, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Rice, who was against Kaepernick, now he's for Kaepernick. Yeah, he flip-flopped from one of the politicians. But what impressed me about it, Steve, is the win against Charlotte. You know, for Eastern Michigan to go to Charlotte and score 38 points on the road like that, that's progress, Steve. You and I know Eastern Michigan, generally regarded as maybe the worst team in college football after Idaho.
Yeah, but Charlotte's giving them a run for their money. You remember what Louisville hung 70 on them a few weeks ago, and Eastern Michigan was
Louisville hung 63 on FSU. Charlotte not looking so bad suddenly.
That is true. They're only 7 points.
I'd use that if I was the Charlotte coach. Don't feel bad, kids. Look what they just did to FSU.
Of course, they were a home underdog to Eastern Michigan, though, last week. But it was only two, so, I mean, that was an impressive win still. And Cal Davis, you know, hung with Oregon, and, you know, Wyoming beat them by about the same margin, but that's still an FCS team. Their one road game, they got blown out 52-17 in Nebraska. It's a tough call, but I think you could definitely make a case. There's a little bit of a motivation edge here for Eastern Michigan as a home dog on national TV for a change.
You know what? It looks like the over's the play here, Steve. The Pokes have given up nearly 1,000 yards through the air through three games. Eagles scored 38 last week, put up 61 on Mississippi Valley State. They got a decent quarterback. Both teams are scoring this year. I think we got an up and down affair here. Track meet tonight.
Yeah, both teams are averaging 70 total points per game, both of them this season. Total's around 61.5, so it might be a little low.
What do you make of this one here, Steve? Because I remember a couple of weeks ago, Baylor was in this exact same spot, and they were laying 31 and ended up going up to like 33.5 or so before kickoff. Now we have TCU laying 20.5, 21 in this spot. And so you're telling me that Baylor, two touchdowns better than TCU? I'm not buying that. I think TCU run it up and beat the crap out of them tonight.
Yeah, and that Baylor game, 40-13 was the final there, so they lost by 27. They did cover SMU.
It was 6-6 at the half, too. So
right. And, I mean, they beat Liberty last week by 15 as a 15-point favorite, so that was not an impressive win. North Texas is a bad team. They beat on the road as a favorite. Yeah, I think this is a spot where TCU should be pretty focused. Only concern would be that they do have Oklahoma on deck. But the fact that it's a Friday night spotlight game against another in-state team, the fact they lost that Arkansas game a few weeks ago, you would expect a pretty good effort.
It's an inner-city rivalry, too, not just in-state, inner-city. So, you know, kids know each other, and they'll be fired up. It's ESPN television. And, you know, it seems like, as well, these what we think are flat spots. Like, look at Clemson last night.
I know.
Was that a flat spot, or was that a tune-up getting ready? Hey, we better crank it up a notch for next week, right?
Yeah, on the short week, too, to have to prepare for the option, that was impressive. Speaking of flat spots, Marshall this week at home, a 3-4 touchdown dog. Louisville just beat FSU. They've got Clemson next week. We'll see how good of a coach Petrino is. That's one of the worst scheduling spots I've ever seen for a top 10 team this week.
I'm taking the 27 points, Steve.
With Marshall, yeah, I like Marshall. Yeah. I used him in my line watch on covers.com, and that line's great. We might get 28, Gabe. I put it out Monday at 25.5. It's 27 now. The public will keep, you know, coming in on Louisville.
Yeah, you know, Marshall's 9-0-1 against the spread the last 10 times at home and getting more than 6 points. That's too many points here. Marshall can score, and it's funny. It's a classic buy low now, isn't it, Steve? Because Marshall got blasted last week is 17-point home favorites to Akron, but yeah, that happens. You know, Marshall are a good program. They're a veteran team. They'll bounce back, and it gives us line value now.
Yeah, since you've got your own database now, I want you to check for me when the spread is a 42-point difference from the week before, let me know how they do. Well, it's actually 44 now. They were a 17-point favorite. Now they're a 27-point dog on the same field.
Yeah, what a swing. Like, I don't know. Has there ever been a swing like that? Like,
not that
seriously.
I can remember.
Yeah,
and
that's about
as extreme. Yeah, and they're averaging 50 points a game, like you said, so they got plenty of backdoor cover.
All right, so, hey, the prime time. This one's the sexiest game of the night here, the Trojans and the Utes. USC off to their worst start since, like, 2003 with a 1-2 record. Got blasted by Bama. They beat up on Utah State, and then they got shut down last week. Only the fourth time in 143 Pac-12 games that the Trojans failed to score more than 10 points. They made the cornerback change. Max Brown's out. Sam Darnold is in. Yet I got to tell you, man, I know Darnold's played a little bit. He's thrown like 22 passes in his career, but this is a tough spot. Even by Michigan Wolverines last year with Harbaugh, we had to go up there and open up in week one, and we lost. That's a hard place to go and play, Steve, on a Friday night, man.
Yeah, and the altitude's a factor. I mean, one of my favorite handicapping factors in college basketball are these West Coast California teams, you know, the Big West Conference especially, the Pac-12 now with Colorado and Utah in the conference. You know, these California teams going into the altitude, and basketball's a real factor, but even football, I think it is. And you look at USC, they returned 10 offensive starters this year. The only guy they lost was Cody Kessler, who'll be starting for the Browns this weekend. But what a loss that turned out to be, because this passing attack has been awful. They're averaging just 5.5 yards per pass against teams that allow 6.5 so far. Now they're taking on a Utah team that's given up only 4.9 yards per pass. So we're going to find out if they fix that quarterback situation or not tonight.
And I know you love teams that create turnovers. The Utes are real good at that too, Steve. They get to the corner. They lead the Pac-12 in turnovers and sacks. They got 15 sacks through three games. And I'll tell you, Utah, I'm a big Kyle Whittingham fan. Utah has always been a rock solid program. But Tyler Wilson, he was a tough kid, but he wasn't very good, Steve, the quarterback. Now they got this Williams kid in here from LA, much more athletic. They're getting much better athletic quarterback play this year.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing they haven't done well this year is offense. They're averaging 26 points a game against teams that allowed 26, but defensively they're holding them to 12. So, you know, this could be an underplay here, especially if USC continues to struggle to throw the ball.
Yeah, I missed her over all the time, and I didn't touch a total in this because
I
can see a 23-20 style game. You know what I mean? You're right. It's going to be could be a grinder, but you got to like the Utes or nothing here, Steve.
It's tough for me to back USC right now until they start throwing the ball better.
All right, I'm going to throw a weird NFL game at you here, but the Baltimore Ravens are one of the undefeated teams left in the National Football League. They've had a favorable schedule so far. They played the Buffalo Bills, and that game was actually pretty close. And then last week, they were down 20-0 to the Browns, but they came back and won the football game. Now they get a Jags team who actually played well against the Packers in week one. Complete train wreck last week. Gus Bradley's now 12-38 as a head coach in the National Football League. If he doesn't win this game, like, I wouldn't shock me if he actually gets fired, or at least, you know, the bell is tolling for thee, Bradley, right now. What do you make of this football game? I like the Jags to bounce back, but I can't do it. Like, I, you know, logic says the Jags, but I not with my money. I can't do it.
Well, at this point, you know, week three, week four is when we start to get some value based on early results. You've got an 0-2 straight up an ATS team against a 2-0 straight up an ATS team. So I do think there's a little bit of value now at Jacksonville. They would have probably been favored in this game back in week one. They were only a 3.5-point dog at home to Green Bay in week one. This line only a couple points off of that. By the way, I have seen odds on first coach fired at some offshore sports books. Jacksonville's coach is about third on that list. Rex Ryan, 2-1 favored. Maybe some heavy money coming in from you.
No, you know what? Rex is Rex. They have nowhere to run to now. Rex, I think Rex was told he's going to make it through the year, but yeah, he's done too. But yeah, Bradley's job is on the line here. And I tell you what, Pagano might not be far off, actually.
Irsay's was fourth. He was fourth on that list.
Yeah, Irsay's pretty crazy. So 49ers and Seahawks. Here's another comparison, Steve, like we just used with the Baylor TCU game. The Carolina Panthers were like 13.5-point favorites, although it came down to kickoff. And now Seattle only 9.5. The odds makers and the bettors clearly scared off by Seattle's anemic offense so far.
Well, I think it's pretty good cause for concern because, I mean, we have a common opponent here. San Francisco beat them 28-0. The Rams made them punt, 10 times in that game, I think. And then Seattle goes in and only scores 3 points in that game. If you told me going into week three, one of these teams would have scored 55 points, the other one would have scored 15 points. I'm pretty good with money management, but I would have probably have still lost the house being wrong on that one. So it is tough to back Seattle right now, laying almost, you know, a touchdown and a half when they've only scored 15 total points this year. Yet again, you still feel like San Francisco is kind of a bottom feeder and Seattle finds a way to win this one. Maybe they break out this week.
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, don't forget the Hawks defense. The offense is struggling, but the defense only giving up 9.5 points per game. Niners gave up 46 last week in Carolina. Niners just 2-9 against the spread. The last 11 is a putt. But say what you will about Chip Kelly. He's a good football coach, and he seems his people skills seem to be much better right now. He got into it with a media guy about the Kaepernick situation. Like the guy in the media asked that Kelly if he's upset. Kelly's like, no, I'm not upset. It's, you know, and then Kelly even got deep and said, look what's going on right now. You know, people are getting shot every day. Of course he's upset. And then the reporter was mad that Kelly wasn't upset. And it's funny. And Kelly was like, what are you telling me how to feel now? Like, it was a really weird, like, exchange between the two of them. But, you know, Kelly was accused of not getting along with African-Americans. And I thought that was a bad rap. And that, you know, he trades all the black players. And, you know, that was ridiculous, that stuff. You know, LeSean McCoy's an idiot for starting that crap.
Yeah, no, that was always absurd. That actually really irritated me. I hate when people play the race card. They do it a lot in politics, getting back to the debate. You know, they just call someone a racist because they disagree with them or they don't like them. But I'd forgotten about that now that you bring that up with the incident Kelly's had this week. I didn't think about that. Maybe he's being overly cautious now.
Yeah, now he's like, hey, look at me. He's going to show up wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt at the next conference, Steve.
He's going to consult with Ted Danson.
Yeah, no, that's not a good idea. That's not a good idea. All right, so... All right, we got like a minute and a half. We got 2 minutes here. NASCAR, New Hampshire. Truex has clinched his spot, but people lay him in. He's running so strong. He's the favorite here. I like Denny Hamlin. You know, Steve, you know, you and I are always looking for long shots, but at this time of the year, we're looking at the usual suspects here. And I'm not going out on a limb here, but I like Hamlin, Kenseth, and Logano.
Well, the thing about Truex is, you know, yes, he's locked up the win for the next round, but then again, he has nothing to lose at this point where all these other guys don't, you know, you think they all have to win. They don't have to win. They just have to finish top 12 out of the 16 chase drivers.
You're right. Like Logano was second last week, and I was reading, he's very happy. He's like, we didn't win, but I'm really happy with the start. He goes, I just got to stay out of trouble now.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I think that's even more of a reason not to use Logano, maybe, even though he's okay on these types of tracks. His teammate, Brad Keselowski, has the best driver rating over the last few years, actually, at New Hampshire. I'm sure. But Kinsett would be one of my top picks. You know, he's been a little inconsistent at times, but that Gibbs team has still been the most dominant team. Keep in mind, Truex is basically the fifth Gibbs driver this year, and he's exactly. been dominant. And Kinsett has won three of the last five races at New Hampshire, including earlier this year. So if his practice times are anywhere near decent, he's got to be on your card.
You know what? I told someone yesterday, I did a radio hit actually on ESPN New Hampshire radio, and they're excited for the race. And, you know, they brought up Kevin Harvick. And I said, you know, I think the racing gods are going to get Harvick for, like, Harvick just threw everyone out of the car this year, Steve. You know what I mean? The crew, the owner, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, like, it was everyone's fault. And Harvick said, hey, I'm responsible as well. But I thought Harvick was a little bit too public with his bashing of everybody all the time. And now suddenly he finds himself in a little trouble.
He's so consistent, though. It's really hard not to have him on your card this week as well. He's actually run really well at New Hampshire over the years. And picking him to win is always difficult because he has more second-place finishes than anybody in recent history. But from a fantasy perspective, he usually racks up 50, 60 points automatically.
Man, it's so nice looking at the NASCAR video as opposed to looking at you and me, Steve, isn't it?
I hear you, man. I like it. I know. Put it back on.
Come on, man. Like,
what does he say it?
Yeah. But we should just have that running the whole show no matter what I'm talking about.
That'd be fine with me. We just loop all the drivers getting in the car, getting out of the car.
Yeah, exactly. All right. ProSportsInfo.com. Check out Steve's website as well as he's one of the Covers experts. Go over to CoversExperts.com. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right, we're going to switch gears literally and figuratively. Joseph Lisi joins us next. We're talking college football. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. We are live. We appreciate everybody listening on a Fantasy Sports Radio Network as well. It's not directly simulcast. It always confuses me. I believe like it's like a half hour difference. I think this show actually plays on radio at like 5 o'clock Eastern. But nevertheless, we're getting a ton of positive feedback now that we're on iTunes. People are really enjoying it. So spread the word. Fantasy Sports Network now on iTunes. And you can listen to great shows. Like my boy Joseph Lisi and Rich Sermonallo talking college football every Saturday morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Network Radio Network at 10 a.m. Let's bring in GoForTheTwo.com, Joe Lisi. Joe, it's always a pleasure. How you doing?
Can't wait for another great weekend of college football, Gabe. Thanks for having me.
All right, Joe, it's unbelievable. The show used to be 30 minutes, now it's 60 minutes, and I still have to talk ultra fast to get everything in. So let's jump right in here. USC, Utah tonight. The Utes were 3-point favorites, fell to 2.5, back up to 3. It's been going back and forth. Interesting dynamics this week with the Trojans. They're making a quarterback change from Brown to Darnold, and there's a rumor out there that E.J. Price punched head coach Clay Helton. Said, I'm going to transfer, and he punched him. Yet, you know, I actually like Helton's answer when he said that E.J. is 6'6", 325 pounds. If he hit me, don't you think you'd be able to tell?
That's a great answer.
It really is. He said, look at him. And he said, because the rumors that he got hit in the head. It's like, really? He said, look at me. Do I look like I just got hit in the head by a 6'6", 325-pound kid?
Unreal, Gabe. It's unreal. We've seen unbelievable circumstances with some of the great programs in college football, but an intriguing matchup. I like USC in this battle. Since 2011, they're 4-1 over Utah and have won those games by 13 points per game, but I think it's a speed factor. Utah struggles with speed teams on their schedule, and I like USC to rebound here. This is a team that they've dominated in recent years, and I think they put it to the Utes in Salt Lake City tonight.
Yeah, you know, it's the one thing. The Utah Utes, they're not a speed-based team. They're more of a power football team. They like to power run the football. But I like the kid that they have, a quarterback with Williams. I like the fact, what I like about this, I like the Utes in this game. I think, Eccles Stadium's a real tough place to go up there and beat them. The Utes beat them last time they were here, 24-21. I see a similar style. This Utah Ute defense, they've forced 8 turnovers, Joe, in 3 football games. 6 interceptions. They lead the Pac-12 with 15 sacks. I like those ingredients going up against a raw quarterback in Sam Darnold.
Yeah, that's a great point, Gabe. They did it last year. They were plus 13 in turnover margin, and over the last couple of years have one of the best sack totals in college football. So you're bringing up great points. The one thing I just look at when I look at this matchup, Utah on the perimeter defensively, they struggle with some spread attacks, and I like the speed of USC. I know from a program perspective, a lot of negativity, but this is a game I think USC can get healthy in and dominate this matchup. I think they win this game by about 10 points, but we'll see how it plays out a little bit later.
The Louisville Cardinals have become the trendy team of 2016. Lamar Jackson for Heisman. It's amazing looking at the numbers. The Cardinals were 100-1 to win a national championship before the year started. Now sitting at 6-1 to win the national championship. Clemson did their part last night, disposed of Georgia Tech in relatively easy fashion, at least from a defensive perspective. Now it's Louisville's turn, coming off that emotional huge win where they hung 63 on the Noles. Last week. Everybody's down on the herd right now after they got upset by 17 last week. But Marshall has some talent. You know, Louisville are going to win this game, I would assume, Joe. But, you know, the point spread is 27.5 points. That's absolute lunacy that Louisville are favored by 4 touchdowns at Marshall, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a great point, Gabe. I mean, Marshall defensively has only given up 96 rushing yards per game, and they got dominated last week at home against Akron. I don't see that happening again. I think they're in this game from start to finish and can force Lamar Jackson and that offense to methodically work down the field. I'm in agreement with you. I think there's no doubt that Louisville wins this matchup, but I think Marshall makes it a lot closer than the 27 points. I think the Herd keep it within the number this coming weekend.
Let's talk about the SEC game of the week with the Florida Gators. Have beaten the Tennessee Volunteers 11 consecutive times. Volunteers were heavily hyped coming into the year. The jury's still out on these guys. They were flat against App State in week one. They weren't very good in the first half against Vautech. Vautech sort of unraveled in the second. And then last week, they were sort of flat once again. But I wonder if they're just sort of there waiting for this game. Maybe Tennessee's a team that plays up or down to the level of competition. This is a monster game. We find out if the Vols are for real. Are they? Who wins tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm going with the better defense in Florida, only giving up 42 rushing yards per game, 87 passing yards per game, and holding opponents to 19% on third down conversions, coupled with the fact in 3 games, Gabe, they have 16 sacks, number one in FBS. I like the better defense here, even though Austin Appleby's getting the start. I like Florida's defense to carry them to a 23-20 victory over the Vols.
You know, I haven't really wavered in this game. I like the points. I sort of want to buy in the Tennessee getting it done. But I'm not ready to lay 6 points. You know, as you stated, even if they do get it done, it's going to be an extremely close football game. Tennessee's offense as well. Dobbs really isn't killing it either, Joe.
No, I agree with you. If you keep him in the pocket, he's an inconsistent passer, and that's the one thing I think Florida will look at in this ballgame. They've been able to force him to throw over the top of their secondary, and that's why they've been in ballgames and have won 11 straight, and more importantly, over the last couple of years. So I like Florida's secondary matched up against Dobbs and Malone on the outside. Malone is his only big play weapon, so I think Florida will be in this game from start to finish, and I'm calling for the upset in Neyland Stadium this Saturday.
Well, 12 straight victory for the Gators, says Joe Lisi, gopherthetwo.com. Interesting, Luke Del Rio's out. People are always critical of the Gators quarterback play to begin with. Austin Appleby is in, yet the fact is Austin's played before. He's transferred from Purdue. He's played in the Big Ten before, so he's not a completely raw kid coming off the bench. Stanford and UCLA. Stanford, completely underrated football team every week. And, you know, you look at Stanford, no cream puffs, man. And, you know, they beat K-State. Now they beat the USC Trojans. Now they go on the road for the first time. They go to the Rose Bowl to take on the Bruins. Who you got?
Yeah, I like UCLA in the upset, Gabe, even though since 2011, Stanford's won 6 straight by 17 points per game. UCLA only given up 133 rushing yards on the ground. They played a very physical blue-collar team in BYU. I like the way that secondary's playing, and I like Josh Rosen to exploit that Cardinal secondary this coming weekend. I think they get the upset victory in the Rose Bowl on Saturday night.
A big football game, and we'll wrap it up with this one, a Big 12 battle, Oklahoma State and Baylor. Baylor 3-0. They haven't really clicked yet. It's interesting. I saw Grobe saying that they're a little frustrated. They're trying to run a fast offense, but it's just not working for some reason. They're not going as fast as they want. And you can't blame Grobe because Kendall Briles is still running things. So, you know, it's interesting. Art's gone, but the coaching staff, it's the same coordinators, same pace. You know, Grobe's a different style of coach. They are running the football a little bit more right now. I think the spread's too high here. I'm a big Seth Russell guy. Mason Rudolph versus Russell's a nice quarterback battle. I got to take the 8 points with the Pokes. Who you like?
Yeah, I like Mason Rudolph as well, coming off a school record, 540 passing yards against Pittsburgh. And I give the coaching advantage to Mike Gundy over Jim Grobe. I think it's a very close game that Oklahoma State will cover this matchup in Waco.
You know what? As a longtime college football gambler, Jim Grobe's always been one of my favorites because, yeah, you know, I used to call the bookie, you know, give me Wake Forest plus the 17, Wake Forest plus the 14, Wake Forest plus the 21. But Jim Grobe was coaching, you know, he was overachieving with not as much talent. It's a weird spot that he's in now, Joe, with all this talent and Grobe laying points all the time. And we're seeing he ain't covering the big point spreads. He's not used to this type of team and this neighborhood that he's in. He's going to be fighting in a dogfight just to win this game. Don't forget, Baylor were tied 6-6 with SMU at the half a couple of weeks ago. We got to get out of here. But for more excellent insight from Joseph Lisi, join him and Rich Sermonello Saturday mornings right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for the time, Joe.
Oh, anytime, Gabe. Enjoy the weekend. Love the show.
There's Joseph Lisi with us. All right, we switch gears once again. We go from the college gridiron. We talk some NFL pro football, some bets from Pat Mayo coming up next. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. Since we are live, we can tell you that Jacoby Brissett's got like torn ligaments in his hand. And, hey, the wheels just keep rolling for the New England Patriots. I would assume that Garoppolo will be back. I mean, he was questionable for last night's game, but it really is incredible how the Patriots just win with no matter who the quarterback is. And honestly, Pat, they're playing the Bills next week. I think that the Patriots could beat the Bills with you or me playing quarterback for them.
Yeah, it's going to be – if Garoppolo doesn't play, I'm very curious to see who they end up going with. I have no idea.
They'll bring in a guy. Like, who's
sure,
who's a guy that's kicking around right now?
Is Matt Castle still available? Like, is he still a free agent?
Yeah, Castle. You got your Castles and your Ponders.
Yeah, no, I think Ponder's on San Francisco.
Oh, is he? Yeah.
I think Castle maybe. I think Castle maybe. Like, that would make the most sense.
No, it really would. Hey, you bring Castle. Hey, 1 week.
Welcome back. 1 week.
Basically, just give him the same playbook. All right, listen, we're going to do the same thing we did.
Can you do this? Do this and hand it off. You'll be good to go.
All right, and how about Tim Tebow?
Hey, listen, I would.
Or how about your boy Johnny Manziel?
Oh my God!
Yeah, Johnny Manziel on the Patriots.
That would be the best. I want that to happen so badly now.
They could beat the Bills with you or me, but not Manziel. Let's not get carried away.
Hey, Manziel kind of looks like me, so we're good to go.
You know what? But poor Johnny, they couldn't even because he'd be facing a suspension because he's an idiot. But anyways, we're not wasting any time talking about Manziel.
He's got classes to go to, doesn't he? Isn't he back in college now?
Yeah, he's only going going back to school. Not like to get his life in order. He's going back to school like to play like beer pong and like hit the bowl.
Sounds great.
All right. Super lock time. So last week, a little bit of a disappointment with the Cincinnati Bengals. I thought the Bengals.
Can I get mad about this for a second?
Yeah, I thought the Bengals.
Tyler Boyd was down. He was down. They went to review. He was clearly down. And they gave Pittsburgh the ball. There's a lot of something fishy going on with that game. I didn't like it. I went 12-4 ATS last week. I lost my super lock.
Cincinnati had a lot of opportunities before that.
They did. They definitely
did. And I was
did.
On the Bengals. I wasn't happy about that call, but there was an instant, Pat, when they were first and goal. There were two pass interference penalties. Like, it was one of those deals where they had, like, nine plays in a row.
You
couldn't score, like, against the Steelers.
It just sucked because the entire game you were watching, it's like, the Bengals are keeping this close. Touchdown is the easy cover here. That's all they needed. Even if they missed the two-pointer, they still would have covered the number. But nope, Tyler Boyd is down, and it all goes to hell. So that sucks. And I got for the super lock this week, I got to go back to an old reliable for myself.
One thing with the Cincinnati Bengals, and it concerned me, and I sort of wanted to like the Bengals this week, but the fact of the matter is Andy Dalton's got a bad ankle, so he's somewhat hobbled in the pocket. They can't run the football. You know, so it's good news from a fantasy perspective. If you own A.J. Green, et cetera, they're throwing the ball like 75% of the time to Bengals. They can't run the ball.
A.J. Green didn't do anything last week. And the Broncos are an even tougher matchup.
No, but that was a weird game last week. And same, look, Antonio Brown targeted 11 times, 39 yards. Those two teams, Pat, always play low-scoring games. You know that.
Listen, we talked about it last week. I think it was 6 of the 7 unders had hit in Pittsburgh between those teams. Under was the bet. I mean, you can make up some money back that way. But this week, it's going to be even harder for those receivers. If you're playing fantasy, like DraftKings-wise, I know it's not a high upside probability. That's the one that I'm looking for. I am all out of sorts today. Just the Bengals are still killing me. But over 10 catches for Gio Bernard out of the backfield last week. 5 for Jeremy Hill. I expect to see more of that game plan again this week. Bernard could just pile up catches.
All right, so let's get to the Super Lock. We need some dramatic music for this, which we don't have. Hey, I know you guys in the booth are going to be happy. I've got a long list of ideas and additions that we're going to be adding next week to the program. So get ready, Warman. All right, Super Lock.
All right, so the Bengals let me down, and actually we talked about it on the show last week that I almost locked back in the Vikings again against the Packers, but I was feeling a bit iffy about it. Not this week. Minnesota on the road, +7. They've held 6 opponents in a row to fewer than 17 points. If it happens again in Carolina and they only give up 17 points, they're going to cover the +7. Even if they lose that game 17-14, I like Minnesota's defense in this game. I'm worried about their offensive line, but the special teams for Carolina has been so bad. Minnesota, very good return game. You might see a special team score in this game if that happens. That or a defensive score. And maybe Cam just continues to turn the ball over, create some short field. Hopefully Blair Walsh doesn't miss every field goal. Feel very comfortable with the Vikings this week on the road. They could outright win this game. I probably wouldn't lay that. I'd take the +7 instead, but I really do like the Vikings.
You know, I'm kicking myself for not taking the Vikings in the first two games of the year, Pat. You know, the last 18 games the Vikings have taken a field, they've covered 16 of them. Well, they're on a 16-2
and someone who
against the spread.
As someone who took them 8 times as a super lock last year, I'm very aware of this.
So, and you know, what happened, I've been off them because it never seems like a good spot. And once again, you're in a similar situation. You know, week one, I don't know, it's the first game of the year. They lost Bridgewater. Sean Hill's going to be the quarterback. Tennessee might be good. And then in the first half, Tennessee looked good. Minnesota kicks their ass. I don't know, week two, it's Green Bay. And now, you know, Bradford's first game. That's what scared me.
That's what scared me.
Sean Hill, I was all in. I'm like, I don't know about Bradford. And then Bradford's out there looking like Joe Montana. Ding, 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 ding. Lighting it up. Now you're getting 7 points, and you can make an argument once again. Ooh, they lost Adrian Peterson. You didn't even bring that up. Doesn't seem to matter, right?
He's averaging like a 1.3 yards per carry. Who
you
cares?
Can argue McKinnon and Asiata out of the backfield provide a nice 1-2 punch. It'll keep the Panthers off guard because they're so predictable, Pat, with AP. They run the ball on first down.
That is exactly the point. And with McKinnon out of the backfield as a capable receiver, it gives them a different dimension than they previously had. And just throw different looks at Carolina, especially if you're going to be passing a lot here. Like, I expect Kyle Rudolph to get somewhat shut down. Diggs is looking amazing so far this season. And the secondary,
I like Diggs this week at $5,100.
The secondary with the Panthers is not great. Yeah, Diggs is one of the most underpriced guys on the DraftKings board this week. I just think this game remains close. I think the defense of the Vikings is going to get enough pressure, create some turnovers that they're either going to score or, again, limit them to 17 or less points. And that way, again, I don't think that the Vikings get shut out. So if they're going to give up 17 points, they cover the 7.
I like Pat Mayo's Super Lock. I endorse, since we're in a political season, I endorse Pat Mayo's Super Lock of the Minnesota Vikings. Right, we've only got 2 minutes, so we'll blast through a couple more games. Lions getting 7 at the Packers. I like the Lions.
I like the Lions as well. The game that I'm most terrified on the board now, I picked Arizona -4. -4. It's now down to -3.5. All the money is on the Cardinals. All of it. 80% of spread bets on the Cardinals. This line has dropped from 5 to 3.5 towards the Bills. Something is fishy with this game. I will not be laying a big piece on it when this game comes around. I'm staying away.
The fact that the public loves me proves that the public's not always wrong, Pat. Because, no, and generally, all kidding aside, but generally, I like that. Like, I want to fade what the general public likes and what the obvious pick is. But the public has been pretty correct this year. And I'm a Bills guy, you know. And I always look for a reason to want to take the Buffalo Bills. Sammy Watkins probably not going to play in this game. I really don't know what it matters. You look at every position of this football game, every player, every position, the Arizona Cardinals are better.
I agree.
And not to mention their coach is about 150,000 times better.
Marginally better.
How does that Bills defense match up with this Cardinal wide receiver?
Maybe,
club?
I mean.
How do they stop David Johnson?
They don't. On paper, this game should be a route. Like, I think
Who does Tyrod throw it to?
The score that you mentioned, like 41-7, something like that?
No, 41-17.
41-17. Okay, that's like that's the idea that I had in my head going into this game, but I just start seeing this line movement, and just it really scares the crap out of me. So I'm not going to bet the game. I'm not going to lock it in. I do a super contest as well. Not for as high stakes as you, but that's not going to be one of the five on the card.
One thing that wouldn't shock me as a Bills fan, either get blown out or they lose 23-20 in a heartbreaker and a last-second field goal.
And
that
cover.
Could happen.
And cover.
That could happen. We look at about the middle left. Redskins-Giants. Is this the week that Cousins actually plays well?
I don't know if he necessarily plays well, but I don't like the Giants in plus five, like covering 5 points. I think they're a team that's going to play a lot of close games. We've seen that every game this season. Like, the Saints was a very good pick on the road last week, and the Saints aren't a good road team. So I think that Washington has enough capability on offense to score. The defense isn't putrid. It's okay-ish. And I just think this game stays close. I think the Giants win by three, which means Washington covers.
I think it's a close one, too. And finally, in close, we've got the 49ers and the Seahawks.
Seahawks.
A lot of guys have debated this week. I agree with you, Pat. I think we're getting value here at 9.5. I think Seattle flexed their offensive muscle that they haven't shown yet. Yeah, their offensive line's terrible. It's going to fall into place. Wilson will make plays, and they're just going to eat Gabbert alive. They're only giving up 9.5 points a game. I don't see how San Francisco cover this game.
I agree. It's something like 17-3, 16-3. Stupid scores where they don't score a ton of points.
It's not like last week where it was 46-28 or whatever it was with the Carolina game.
No, that's not going to happen this week.
This one's more 24-3. Yeah.
Yeah, so I like the 9. It's down to 9 right now, so 9 on Seattle. I'm good.
We got to get out of here. Check out all of Pat Mayo's rankings and picks over at the Fantasy Sports Network website and YouTube page. We're going to come back with our plays of the day and our Millionaire Maker lineup for this weekend. All right, it's time for our DraftKings Millionaire Maker lineup. I think I'm thinking outside the box, but I guess we'll find out on Sunday how heavily owned Ryan Tannehill is at the quarterback position. You know, Tannehill's almost like the new Jay Cutler. Everybody rips him all the time, but the fact of the matter is, dude's putting up better DK numbers than Aaron Rodgers has. His numbers are pretty much the same as Carson Palmer's, and he's not nearly as expensive. And oh yeah, Tannehill and the Dolphins opened up at Seattle and played New England, the same New England team that just shut out the Texans. Tannehill has a field day, lights it up, carves up the Browns. Give me Melvin Gordon. Starting to look like a first round back. Going to get a ton of touches. Woodhead's injury hurts the Chargers, but it helps Gordon. I like Gordon against that soft Colts D. DeMarco Murray. He's not great, but he's better than a Yeldon type. And DeMarco Murray gets a lot of touches. And this Raiders defense not living up to the expectations. I like DeMarco Murray this week. Devontae Parker. I don't think he's going to be heavily owned. Came out of nowhere. I liked him coming into the year. He had a bad camp. He was injured. 13 targets last week, 8 catches. That was against the Patriots. I think Devontae Parker has 2 touchdowns this week against the Cleveland Browns. Stephon Diggs, $5,100. Diggs is like the Vikings. Too good to pass up all the time. We're always like, it's a bad spot for the Vikings, but they're playing Carolina. You can throw the ball on Carolina, and either way, it's a close game, and Stephon Diggs is a part of the game, or Carolina is up a bit, and Minnesota's playing from behind. Stephon Diggs at $5,100 is a must play. Antonio Brown, only 39 yards last week, but he was targeted 11 times. That ain't happening again. They got that kid Mills on him this week. He's going to get torched like a bong in the back of the bus. We got Dwayne Allen, Travis Benjamin, and the Miami Dolphin defense. As far as tonight is concerned, give me Eastern Michigan plus 3.5. Wyoming, Eastern Michigan over 61.5. TCU's going to kill SMU. Let's go over 66. USC goes to Utah. They're going to lose. They're going to be 1-3. They're starting a new quarterback. Bad idea going up there into the altitude of the mountains. CFL football. Toronto Argonauts been playing good football since former Central Michigan Chippewa quarterback Dan LeFevre's taken over. LeFevre's my guy. I got Argo fever. Give me the 5.5 against the Red Blacks. Give me the Toronto Argonauts and the Ottawa Red Blacks to go over the number. And finally, in closing, the BC Lions, 7-point teaser to the over against the Edmonton Eskimos in a close football game. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.